ours is under attack. Time has come, we're gonna take it back. Just gonna wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Has come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land, from sea to sea. Don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on the feet of God's only Son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Welcome back into the show. Second hour on this Friday, November 3rd, 2023 edition of Your Defending Fathers with Chuck and Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Joining us in this time slot every Friday from 10 to 11 is Pastor Chatfield. History lesson, Bible lesson, current events, talking about things happening. And you got to know your history, folks. If you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. So good morning, sir. Welcome on into the War of 1812.
Correct. Yes. Okay, so we had declared our independence, as you know, in 1776. And the Constitution was written during the summer of 1787, basically. And then we had the Bill of Rights by 1789, and we were functioning as a country. But we were still a fledgling country. It was still an experiment. And frankly, the United States of America is still an experiment. But so we were trying to exert our independence. Now, you got to understand this about wars. Things are going on all over the world. During the Revolution, the French helped us. The French fleet is what helped bottle in Cornwallis so we could win the final battle of the war. And he helped Washington, Lafayette de Marquette, how do you pronounce that, helped us win the Battle of Yorktown. So we had some allegiance, we had some gratitude toward the French. But at the same time, the English, We are of English heritage, and the English system of law, a lot of the people in our country favored the English, and a lot favored the French. And during the first Washington administration, you had Thomas Jefferson, who was the Secretary of State, and he leaned in the what was called at the time Republican Party, or sometimes called the Democratic Republicans. They kind of favored the French, whereas Adams and Hamilton, and probably some to some degree, Washington favored the English. And while we were trying to live as an independent country, the French and the English had been fighting each other for 100 years. And so what happens in the early and in the late 1790s, while John Adams is president, the French were interfering in our internal politics. The French were trying to bring us into the war with them against the English. And the Federalist Party, they wanted to declare war on France during Adams' administration. And Adams said, no, I'm not going to do it. Actually, even on his tombstone, Adams said the best thing he did as president was not get us dragged into the war between France and England, because they were always fighting. So he maintained our neutrality in that war. And so, and which was probably a good thing to do, because we weren't ready to fight that, to get in that war. Things calmed down a little bit, but by the time Jefferson became president in 1800, there's a new guy on the block that's really exerting his power in Europe, and that's Napoleon. Napoleon was the end of the French Revolution. And so he is now in power, and he has designs to control all of Europe. And while the French had a much stronger continental army than the English still had a strong navy and were still masters of the sea. And so they're fighting back and forth, and that's where I'll leave it because I hear the music.
Yes, sir, absolutely. Great place to stop. Hold that thought. I want to talk about Napoleon with you as well. He's Pastor Chad Fields. I'm Trucker Randy Bishop. We're your defending fathers. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of governments invading your online privacy? Introducing Legendary VPN Services. With our VPN, you can browse the internet with confidence, knowing your personal information is shielded from prying eyes. Say goodbye to hackers and corporate thieves. Our cutting-edge encryption ensures your browsing history remains confidential, even on public Wi-Fi. Protect your privacy today with our reliable and lightning-fast Legendary VPN service. Visit legendarysystems.net or call 231-818-8349. Your privacy is our priority.
Every public meeting follows Robert's Rules of Order. Come learn these rules at a Crash Course Training Workshop in Gaylord, Michigan on Saturday, December 2nd. Michigan's state constitution will also be taught. Come learn how current elected officials are violating their oath of office. This training is a must for anyone who is considering running for elected office or if you want to hold your public servants accountable. To register, go to acconservatives.org for all the details. Again, go to acconservatives.org.
Presque Isle Electric and Gas Co-op has been committed to bringing a brighter future to members for more than 85 years. That's why we're hard at work to create a future-focused fiber broadband network that will connect rural Michigan to the world. PIEG Connect will offer the fastest speeds and most reliable internet available in Northeast Michigan. The future is fiber, powered by Presque Isle Electric and Gas Co-op. Sign up today at PIEGConnect.com.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. Order online for takeout at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against Whipper, Nestle, and the Health Department by subscribing to our podcast at murphyslawdcast.com.
Find everything you need to ride at Northern Leathers and Accessories, where comfort and style meet no matter the season. Find parts, equipment, and other products for motorcycles, snowmobiles, and ATVs, including products from Drag Specialties, Parts Unlimited, Moose Utilities, Lucas, and Champion Power. Plus apparel for men, women, and children, including big and tall sizes. Quality items at prices you can afford. Stop in today to browse our selection located on US 131 in Elba. We are more than just leathers.
I never meant to be so bad to you. One thing I said that I would never do. A look from you and I would fall from grace. And that would wipe the smile right from my face.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Second segment of our history lesson discussion with Pastor Chatfield. And Pastor Chatfield, later today, when you have an opportunity, I just sent you the link to the Thanksgiving movie launch. It's actually coming out on Tuesday, November 1st, is the movie Napoleon, the Academy Award winner Joaquin Phoenix's the lead role of Napoleon, and Vicky and I are going to go see it at the cinemas. I think I'll probably go to the one in Gaylord and watch it there. I'm not going to watch any more movies at AMC. But I'm definitely going to go to the cinemas in Gaylord and watch Napoleon when it opens up Thanksgiving week. And it ties right into what you're saying, you're describing in history. And I want to back the bus up a little bit because I never understood fully when Mr. Goyke taught U.S. history to us how all the fingers that were happening, what you just described, and I let you speak. I didn't want to interrupt you. How we had won our independence, how France helped us, like you explained, and then we ratified our Constitution. December 15th, 1791, we finally got our Bill of Rights passed, fully implemented in the Constitution. But during that time frame, and how you explained, how was it? Because like you said, France and England were always fighting one another. They were fighting each other forever to try to be the superior force. But how was it that they were trying to get Jefferson sworn in January there of 1801? How was it that they were trying to drag us into that battle? Did the French feel we owed them, we were obligated, our loyalty was obligated to them because they helped us gain our independence from Great Britain?
I think there's some truth to that. There is some truth to that. Remember now this, though, when George Washington, the first president, wrote his farewell address, he said, you know, that we should avoid any permanent alliance with any portion of the foreign world. And he said that, you know, this idea that one country owes another country, Washington said it's folly. Don't look for it. I mean, it's like we helped France in World War One and World War Two, and then when 9/11 came and then the War on Terror, whatever you think of that, we were looking for France to help us. They forgot. I mean, you just can't look for that in foreign relations. It just doesn't work.
But President Washington, like you said in his farewell address, he already had the intelligence and the history and the knowledge of how world politics evolved. I mean, going all the way back to, I mean, like you talk about Blackstone and you talk about so many others. But not only that, but he understood the Roman Empire. He understood the Greeks. He understood all that and did not want us. What you're saying is President Washington, when leaving office, only serving two terms, he said, guys, do not be loyal to anybody. Regardless of what they did for us in the past, gaining our independence from Great Britain, we don't automatically owe France anything.
Exactly right. That is true. And the word for Washington was wisdom. That's the key word. He said that our foreign policy should be based on justice and enlightened self-interest. We got to do what's right, but then we got to have enlightened self-interest. Is it in our best America's best interest? And I'm going to tell you this. This is difficult. This is complicated. It was complicated before the War of 1812. So when the British and the French were fighting, and we wanted to remain neutral during, and we did during Adams' administration. He kept us out. Just so you know, there was something called the Quasi-War with France, kind of almost at war with France. And the Federalists who were in power during the administration of Adams wanted to go to war.
Now, I want to be clear on this point so the listeners understand this. This is critical. This is the second president, John Adams.
Correct.
And this is the man who was at odds with many, many of those in Washington, Thomas Jefferson. The animosity where Thomas Jefferson ended up running against Adams and made him basically a one-term president.
Right. Okay. The Federalists that were in power during the John Adams was elected.
Four-year term, right?
1796. His party, the Federalists, wanted to go to war with France. And Adams resisted that. None of the Republicans, the Democratic Republicans, led by Jefferson and Madison, they did not want to go to war, so they would kind of support him on that one point.
Sure.
But they were Adams and Jefferson were good friends. They were both they were kind of the North Pole and the South Pole of the of the revolution, and they were good friends. They worked writing, of course. Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence, but Adams was right there with and helping them. But they had slightly different worldviews here. Adams leaned toward the British and wanted more stability, whereas Jefferson leaned toward the French and wanted more something closer to democracy. Now, once the French Revolution went into full bloom and we had the Reign of Terror under Robespierre, even Jefferson and the Democratic Republicans backed off. And what happened, and here's what happens when you go pure democracy or something like that, you end up in a dictatorship because people get tired of beheadings. I mean, there were 40,000 people were guillotined in the French Revolution, and the military says enough of that. And one very smart, ambitious military leader, Napoleon Bonaparte, he basically comes back and declares himself emperor, and that's the end of the French Revolution. And that's where that is where democracy takes you, ultimately, to dictatorship, because you have to have order, and so you got to be careful here. The Republicans lean toward the French, Jefferson and Madison, and the Federalists lean toward the British. And the British were, and the French were continually fighting. So Jefferson's elected in 1800, and he wants to stay neutral. He doesn't want us to get into a war. But both France and England were telling us, hey, you can't – don't trade with the other country. The British blockaded all the French ports. And they had something called the Orders in Council in 1807, which said no neutral nation in Europe can't trade directly with France. You got to stop in a British port first and let us look at it. And obviously, nobody wanted to do that, including the Americans. And the French countered with something called the Berlin and Milan decrees in 1807, which said that neutral ships like America trading with Britain or obeying the council and orders could be seized. So that put us right in the middle of a war. And what had happened now, because the Jefferson, Madison and Jefferson, Jefferson first and Madison, they were more sympathetic to the French. And the English had this policy of impressment. What that meant was these, because they control the seas, they come up next to an American frigate or American vessel that was just trading, and they would pull alongside, grab a bunch of Americans, and say that you're going to serve in the British Army. Mm-hmm. And that's called impressment. They did that, and they forced 10,000 American sailors to serve in the British Army. Now, here's what British's argument was this. They would say, well, every time we go to port in America, some of our guys get off and they go AWOL on us. They desert. Yep. And so we're going to take other Americans. And they said, United States, until you help us stop this, we're going to impress American sailors. And there was virtually – they did this because they had to have men to run their ships, and they did it because they could do it, because they were a powerful country.
Sure.
And they did – this was a one specific instance that they did called the Chesapeake and Leopard incident. It was in 1807 that the Chesapeake had a sailor on there that was indeed a deserter from the British. They pulled alongside. They grabbed him. They stopped a warship and took them off, and they killed some American sailors, and so to get
their British soldier back.
Yes, their British sailor back. And by this time, a lot of the country was clamoring for war against the British, and there was the western part of the United States. Well, there was a rise of a new breed of legislators led by somebody called Henry Clay.
Oh yeah,
from Kentucky, he yep. becomes Speaker of the House, and these guys are called war hawks.
Yep.
Let's go to war with Britain, and so. But Jefferson did resist that; he resisted it, and in 1807, he leaves office the following year. He issues something on the Embargo Act of 1807. And here's what he said. Look, we can't tolerate this. Both France and especially England, you got to recognize our freedom of the seas. So he basically said, and this was passed by the Democratic Republicans and signed by Jefferson, and said, we're not going to trade with anybody. We're not going to trade with either of you guys.
We're just shutting it down.
Yeah. And here's the irony of this. The part of the country that was most upset about what the British and French were doing to us was New England, because their economy was based upon shipping. However, when the Embargo Act of 1807 was passed, that just totally closed down all the shipping, and it really hurt New England. And even though they didn't like what England was doing to us, they liked less the response of the Democratic Republicans and Jefferson, the Embargo Act, because that really hurt them. And then and that hurt the whole country, because you got to trade. You have to trade. And so they passed in 1809 during the Democratic Republicans in Madison's first administration, something called the Non-Intercourse Act says, okay, we're just going to limit trade. We're going to forbid trade between France and England. But still, those were
with the United States. I want to make sure you're clear on this. So we are not going to trade at this time in our history. We are not going to trade with France or Great Britain.
Exactly right. But the problem is, those were our biggest trading partners.
Sure.
And New England didn't like it. New England.
Yeah. Where were we going to get our tea from?
And everything. I mean,
right.
And there was a lot of smuggling going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And New England, they really resisted this. New England was a Federalist stronghold to start with.
Yep.
And their economy was built upon shipping. And so there was a big division in the country. The West, they wanted war. When I say West, back in these days, it would be
Kentucky,
like Tennessee, and yep. And the Western parts, they were clamoring for war, and the South was more for war. But the middle colonies were kind of in the middle, but New England was against it because it would hurt their economy, even though the impressing of our sailors hurt them too. They didn't like it.
Yeah.
So the point was, we were in between a rock and a hard place. Jefferson basically said, I got to do something here. We can't just be pawns.
Right. I want to hold you right there at that point. And you triggered a memory for me in this history lesson. My grandfather, who taught me how to chew tobacco on the porch swing of Prestonburg, Kentucky, had a picture of then Congressman Henry Clay on his fireplace mantle. I can't believe you triggered that memory for me. I mean, I was 5-6 years old down there in the holler, sitting on the porch swing, and my mom was so mad at my grandpa because I came in the house and my teeth were all black from chewing tobacco, and yelling and screaming at my grandpa. And I'll never forget, now that you mention it, that he had that congressman's photograph on his fireplace mantle.
Henry Clay is probably, or at least one of the most influential politicians in American history that never was elected president. He was very influential for a long time and wanted to be president, but it never quite worked out for him.
Unbelievable. Triggered a memory in the history lesson with Pastor Chatfield. Bomb the Hour, news break. We'll be right back.